If you've watched any amount of movies, then you have seen what happens when, let's say, a young student wants to start training for a tournament, or a washed-up fighter is ready to make a comeback, or somebody wants to learn an instrument, right? So you've got these scenes of someone who doesn't know what they're doing, is untrained, and then you have the montage. Cue the upbeat music and the person running up and down the hills, falling and trying again, and then just a few short minutes later, they're an expert. You saw it in Rocky. The camera pans across Philadelphia, and he's running up and down stairs and punching meat in a freezer. And a few short moments later, a washed-up fighter becomes a championship brawler. Or in The Karate Kid, Daniel spends so much of the movie, he can't stand on one foot, he can't block a punch, he has no idea why he's painting fences. But then there's that close-up shot, and he's standing, and he's learning the crane kick, and all of a sudden, he wins the tournament. Or in Spider-Man, at the beginning, Miles Morales cannot even stick to the ceiling, but cue the hip-hop track and some encouraging words from mentors, and all of a sudden, he's swinging all around New York City. That's the montage that we see in movies. Now, if most of your lives had a montage, it would be more like checking email and doing laundry and running carpool and like scrolling cat videos, right? That's how we are. It's not that exciting. But nobody wants to focus on the mundane parts. We just skip right through that with a montage because that part's not fun. We want the mountaintop moments. We want the big scenes. And all the day-to-day stuff, it's just less important. We want all the transformation. We just don't want the time spent on it. That's what montages are for. But if you join me in Acts chapter 14 today, you'll see that Luke is not going to let us skip over those things. Luke is not just going to focus on the mountaintop moments. Luke is going to have us pause and say, no, the growth doesn't happen just that way. Growth happens much more slowly, much less flashy. So in Acts chapter 14, the first part of this chapter, Paul has been, well, he's been doing some pretty impressive things. And he's now returning from the first of several missionary journeys. And the first part of that trip, he did do some incredible mountaintop moments. In Cyprus, he stood toe-to-toe with a sorcerer who tried to block the gospel, and the Roman governor believed. In Pisidian Antioch, he preached a sermon so powerful that almost the whole city showed up next week to hear more. In Iconium, God enabled him to perform signs and wonders, and both Jews and Gentiles came to faith. And then in Lystra, he healed a man who'd never walked, and the crowd tried to worship him as though he were a god. But now we're at the end of his trip. He's back in Antioch, and he finds himself meeting with a supporting church. He's meeting with his board or his stakeholders, even his shareholders, the people who are going to hold him accountable for what's happened. What will his report be? Well, we can imagine the conversation. Paul, tell us about the miracles. Now, how many in the crowd when you preached? Now, did you count before communion or after communion? Did you get the people in the lobby? Give us the play-by-play with the sorcerer. That's what we want, the highlight reel, the wins. But what is Paul's most recent work? What was he doing on the second half of his trip, the return home? Well, first, he was in Lystra. And yes, at first the people thought he was a god because he'd healed someone. But then some folks from out of town came in, and Luke tells us this in Acts 14, 19 through 20. These people, they stoned Paul and dragged him outside the city, thinking he was dead. But after the disciples gathered around him, he got up and went back into the city. And the next day, he and Barnabas left for Derbe. So Paul's in the meeting with his supporters. Okay, well, my first KPI for the quarter, one stoning. It was so bad they thought they killed me. And then I just got up and headed on. Keep going with me in this chapter. Then they returned to Lystra, Iconium, and Antioch, strengthening the disciples and encouraging them to remain true to the faith. We must go through many hardships to enter the kingdom of God, they said. Paul and Barnabas appointed elders for them in each church and, with prayer and fasting, committed them to the Lord in whom they had put their trust. So he continues his report. You know, we traveled through cities and we strengthened and encouraged people. We told them things are going to be hard. We did some church governance consulting. And at this point, his supporters have some questions. What's up with the stoning, Paul? Like, did you say something to make them mad? You just visited people? Was it a crowd? You appointed elders? Okay, that's great. Were there some big events to go along with it? Were there lots of fanfare, Paul? So when Paul is reporting back, the story is not just about the miracles. It's about maintenance. It's the quiet, faithful work that keeps believers strong when no one's watching. And Paul's story reminds us that transformation doesn't always happen in some single dramatic moment. It's the accumulation of small, faithful choices. Some of you may have read the bestseller by James Clear called Atomic Habits, and you may remember one of his core concepts, which is that every action you take is a vote for the type of person you wish to become. The whole idea of the book is that change doesn't happen through one big decision or breakthrough. It happens through hundreds of small, often invisible choices, these tiny habits that build up over time. You don't become healthy because you went to the gym once and did a bunch of reps so you could post a photo on Instagram. You become healthy because you kept showing up. You don't become generous because you made one big flashy gift. You become generous because over time you find causes and organizations that you support and people in need and develop a habit of supporting those. Sometimes in ways that people know about, other times in ways that they don't. Clear writes that every decision, every action casts a ballot for the kind of identity you're forming. Many of those votes don't seem to matter much on their own, but over time, they stack up and they tell the truth about who you really are. And I like that picture because for most of us, life is about small, quiet votes. It's the way you talk to your spouse or a friend, the way you treat your server at lunch, the way you pray when no one's watching. Each of those is a little vote for the person you're becoming. This may feel familiar to us, and we buy into the concept. One of the places I felt this most acutely in my life is church camp. Because at least when I was in youth group, the last night of church camp was a mountaintop moment. Everybody's crying, they're hugging people that they didn't even talk to all week, and they're promising to read their Bible every day and never to fight with their parents again. The last night felt like a revival. But then you go home and it doesn't feel all that different. It's the same people. It's the same old fights, the same old problems. And you think, did any of that even matter? Well, it did matter, but just not always in the way that you think. Because the real test of growth is not what happens on the mountain, it's what happens after. It's when you come down and the emotions fade, and it's just you and a choice to keep showing up. That's what we see in Acts 14. Paul comes down from the miracles, the healings, and the crowds, and he just keeps doing the work. There's no stage lights. There's no soundtrack. Just steady faithfulness. That's how it still works. Our spiritual lives can't just be built on flashy moments. They can't be built on big wins. They're built through endurance, through people who keep showing up and encouraging each other and serving and praying and forgiving. It's a member teaching class week after week for a handful of third graders. It's the worship team showing up on a Wednesday night to rehearse and prepare to lead us on a Sunday morning. It's our elders around a table gathered in prayer, mentioning people name by precious name. It's adults and kids walking the streets of Dallas on a Thursday morning with the human impact. It's members setting up trunks so some kids who've had a difficult time can get some candy and have a joy-filled evening. It's one of our members who's begun serving regularly with Liberty Street Garden. And if you'll indulge me for just a moment in talking about some of my fellow ministers who don't always get as much upfront time as I do. It's Hannah and James August taking our students out for a burger or showing up at one of their performances or games and asking them how school and friends are going. It's Maddie Kate Ross investing time to build relationships with our girls and now baptizing more people at this church than the senior minister. It's Farland Clark showing up to speak at funerals of all sizes, some you see, some you don't, some big events in here, some small gatherings even in the columbarium, comforting grieving family members. It's Jim Barnett and Julie Clark cooking lasagna for one of our largest young adult Wednesday nights in a while. It's Jeff Wheeler on a lift in the gym fixing projector alignments on a Saturday morning when he's not even supposed to be at work. It's people who've been here before that I've never met, like Jim Burleson, who parked his car at the high school parking garage every Sunday morning so we'd have one additional space in our small parking lot. And it's you. When you send someone a note or a text because you saw their name in the bulletin, it's you when you take time to bring a package of diapers for a drive for Christian Works, one of our ministry partners. It's you when you see someone new who looks like they could use some encouragement and you just stop for a moment and talk. It's you when you cook or send a meal because your Bible class sent out an email. None of that gets applause, but that's what keeps the church alive. Jesus lived this rhythm too. All the crowds flocked to him for the miracles, but the Gospels tell us that he kept sneaking away to just pray alone. Even Jesus' ministry grew in the mundane, not just the miracles. So where does that leave us? Because we love the mountaintop moments. And that's okay, because they remind us that God is real and faith is alive. But the question is not just what happened on the mountain. The question is what happened after. What happens after the mountain? So tonight we're hosting an area-wide service with predominantly black and predominantly white churches gathered. It will be moving and inspiring. The music will soar. You'll leave feeling hopeful about what God can do. But Acts 14 reminds us that the real work of unity happens after the service. It's in the long conversations, the shared meals, the slow trust building, and even the public advocacy. Unity is not achieved in a service. It's lived out in daily faithfulness. The same is true for your own personal faith. Your growth does not depend on the next spiritual high. It depends on small, repeated acts of obedience. It's showing up in prayer, staying faithful, in your relationships, serving when no one notices. That's where God does the deep work. That's why we do things like Beyond the Walls, because that's what discipleship looks like between the highlights. It's not flashy. There may not be cameras or applause, but this is where the gospel grows, in ordinary, faithful service. So I would invite you to show up tonight and sign up to serve, not because all of it is exciting, but because it's important. Because that's what it means to follow Jesus, to strengthen and encourage and build and show up. And that's how we'll grow too, not through a montage of big moments, but through the ordinary footage that everyone wants to skip past. If Hollywood wrote your story, the montage would skip that part. All the quiet prayers and the unseen acts of service and the long obedience. But God doesn't cut that footage. That's the part he calls faithfulness. That's where disciples are made. That's the part where you actually grow. Think of how many things in your life changed because someone just stayed around and was faithful. A parent who kept showing up, or a mentor who kept checking in, or a friend who kept forgiving. Staying is underrated because in Acts 14, it doesn't end with a bunch of fireworks. No fanfare. Luke simply writes this, and they stayed there a long time with the disciples. That's it. That's what they did. They stayed. They were faithful. Their presence was their ministry. There's no big montage, no flashy moments. Just steady, faithful presence between the highlights. And my friends, that is how the gospel grows. Let's stand and sing.